So here we go. The broad scope of conversation is this. Addiction. And I'm going to get to the specifics of this in a minute. So, how many of you would say or agree addiction bad? Okay, we can all agree, right? Addiction is bad. When we normally talk about addiction, what are we talking about?
Drugs,
right? We're talking about chemical substances, right? We're talking about drugs. We're talking about alcohol. We're talking about a physical, physiological addiction to some sort of substance that grabs you and it doesn't let go and it changes you in lots of ways, right? It doesn't only change you physically as you physically crave this thing, but it also changes you and affects your life in many, many other ways, right? Emotionally, spiritually, mentally, all of that stuff. The kind of addiction that I want to talk about this morning is at its base, I think all addiction is the same. It has the same root problem. And I'm going to start there. Addiction is a worship of something. Okay? It is when you talk about worship, it is a devotion to something, right? Worship seems to be a very Christian term, but I think it can be used. It's whatever you give yourself over to, right? Whatever you latch onto, whatever you spend a lot of time with, whatever you adore, whatever you routinely engage in, right? That becomes a part of what you need. At the heart of any kind of addiction, especially the kind that we're going to get to today, I think, is the idea of idolatry, right? That you are setting something up that you worship. Now, we don't always do this consciously. We don't always choose to do this. Sometimes it just happens, right? Sometimes it's just we find ourselves in patterns that we can't get out of, that we just cycle over and over and over and over again. And maybe it takes somebody pointing it out. Maybe it is a realization that, hey, this is something that I am actually addicted to. Edward Welch, who is a neuropsychologist as well as holds a doctorate in theology, he calls addiction a worship disorder. And he points to idolatry as the theme, and he writes, "It is a problem not outside of us, located in a liquor store or on the internet. The problem is within us. Alcohol, drugs are essentially satisfiers of deeper idols. The problem is not the idolatrous substance. It is the false worship of the heart." Okay, so let's think about for a minute the problem with this and idols and idolatry and all of that. Paul has a conversation, 1 Corinthians in chapter 6, verse 12, and he says, "All things are lawful for me, but not all things are beneficial. Not all things are useful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any." What is at the heart of what he's talking about? Now, there's a lot going on in Corinthians. We don't have time to really delve into all the historical stuff going on there. But at its face, what do you think this statement is? All things are lawful for me, but not all things are beneficial. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. What do you think that means? What do you think he's saying? Okay, I'm just going to talk because we don't have much time. So what he means is just because you can do something does not mean that you should do something, right? The conversation is about, I've been enlightened, and just because there's this idol meat that we all know, like idols don't really exist and none of their gods, even though that meat's been sacrificed to them, I can still eat it because it's not really like tainted meat or whatever. And that's causing a problem in the church, and everybody's getting really upset, and he's trying to address that. And so what he's saying is, just because you can do this doesn't mean you should do it, because it is doing something to you, and it is doing something to those that are around you. So even though it's okay to do it, doesn't necessarily mean that it's helpful or beneficial. And then this final statement is really important too. that that I will not be brought under the power of anything. So what is it that's doing the controlling here? If you think back to last year, if you were here with us last year, we had a conversation about Romans, right? We spent a lot of time in Romans. And at the very beginning of Romans, in chapter 1, he lays out the problem of sin. What is our understanding or our concept of sin? And then he has these vices and lists and things later. And it's not, we pointed out that it's not all of these activities that he's calling sin. Those are merely symptoms of sin. Sin is this exchange for worship of the Creator to worship of the created, worship of the creature. So at the heart of idolatry, at the heart of sin, is an exchange for true worship of God to worship of self, to worship of what I want, to worship of the created thing. The psalmist writes it like this, talking about idols. They have mouths, but they do not speak. Eyes they have, but they do not see. They have ears, but they do not hear. Noses they have, but they do not smell. They have hands, but they do not handle. Feet they have, but they do not walk. Nor do they mutter through their throat. Those who make them are like them, and so is everyone who trusts them. I think that's pretty powerful. You become the thing that you worship, right? You become the thing that you worship. Now, what is worship? Again, worship is that which we spend a lot of time devoted to. And it could be anything. We give ourselves over to it, and we spend a lot of time engaged in it, and we end up becoming it. Now, one more word. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, there's a conversation about warnings against idolatry. Now, there's a whole lot of history involved in this too, but let me just read a little bit and point out what he's saying. I do not want you to be unawares, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and sea. They all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now, obviously, this is pointing back to what event? Israelites, after the Exodus, wandering around the wilderness, right? And Moses going up on the mountain and being like, what's he done? Where's he gone? Where's God? Let's create our own idols to worship. Now, these things took place as examples for us, that we might not desire evil as they did. Do not be idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and to drink, and they rose up to play. And then he mentions a few other things, like we shouldn't indulge in sexual immorality, as some of them did. We should not put Christ to the test, as some of them did, and were destroyed, or the Lord, and were destroyed. Nor grumble, as some of them did. Now, these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction. Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands, take heed lest he fall. Okay? So this is my warning from earlier. Like, once I get to where I'm going to tell you what the specifics is of this conversation, take heed if you think you're standing, lest this really be your downfall. Okay? No temptation has overtaken you that is not common. This is where he says God will give you a way out of this. Verse 14, flee from idolatry. Then, he says, I speak to as sensible people, judge for yourselves what I say. And then he goes into this, and we usually just do this part. The cup of blessing we bless, is it not a participation in the blood of Christ? The bread we break, is it not a participation in the body of Christ? But there is one bread, and we who are many are one body, and we all partake of one bread. Now, usually, we just read that, and we read it in the context of what? Communion. Right? So why is he sticking what should just be read at communion here in the conversation with idolatry and what we spend our time with? Consider the people of Israel. Are not they who eat the sacrifices participants in the altar? What do I imply then? That food offered to idols is anything, or that an idol is anything? No, I imply that what pagan sacrifice they offer to demons and not to God. I do not want you to be participants with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and of the table of demons. So, What he's saying is, he's drawing a distinction between what we're talking about, right? What we're saying is, you cannot do both. You cannot say, I stand over here and I give all of my time and all of my attention to this thing that it's not really an idol. It's not really a big deal. It's not really a god that I'm worshiping. I'm just spending all my time doing it. You cannot do that and communion, which stands at the heart of the Christian experience in worship, right? Where we are partnering with the body and the blood of Christ. The reason he throws this in here with all this conversation about idolatry isn't random. It's very specific. He's saying, choose what it is that you are going to serve and what it is that you are going to worship. Because you cannot do both. You can't do both. You can't be someone who says, I want to participate in the body and the blood of Christ, and I'm going to worship this, and this is what I'm going to give myself over to, while also participating in all of this other stuff, giving yourself over to all of these other kinds of things. Right? So, addiction is when we do that, when we give ourselves over to all of these other kinds of things. If you think back to Romans, the problem is, it's when you take anything in life and you make it equal to God. That's the point of the passage here in Hebrews 2. Hebrews as well, not Hebrews 2. There is no Hebrews 2. Hebrews as well, right? So he's saying we cannot have anything in our life that we put on the same level as our worship of God, because we are making it equal to God. So this is anything that has the power over us to control us, to demand more of our time or attention than we are willing to or we ought to be giving it. If there is something that has the power to destroy our happiness because we're not able to do it, anything that we have that is a thing in our life that is equal to the devotion due God, that is idolatry. That is addiction. Now, to move kind of out of the Christian world and in a little bit to the psychological world, I have 6 items here on the board. Psychologists identify these 6 areas as ways of determining addiction that does not involve chemical substance, okay? Chemical substance is pretty easy to identify. However, what about activities? What about other things? How do you go from something that's just something you do, something that's helpful, something that's, you know, normal, like say a football fan versus the fan who paints themselves up crazy and spends millions of dollars in fan gear every year and going to games, right? There's a difference. So not everything that we do is idolatrous or addictive. But there is a certain point at which it crosses over, right? The line between activity, you know, just doing things, and addiction lies at the crossroad where an activity that is positive or neutral takes a decidedly negative turn. And here are some ways that you can think about it. So number one is importance. How important has this thing become to your sense of self and how you live your life? Okay? So whatever this thing may be, how important is it to you, to your sense of self, and how you live your life? And it's not only about how much you're doing it, but how much you're not doing something else. Okay? So it's what it's replacing, what it's getting rid of. How much time are you devoting to this rather than other healthy things that you could be doing? Number two, reward your response. When you're engaging in this thing, this activity, does it make you feel better? Does it give you a sense of euphoria or joy or happiness? Does it make you feel like you're more in control of your world? Does not participating in this make you feel panicky? Does it make you feel worse? Can you not just not do it, right? So this is what we call a dopamine response. For those of you who are a lot smarter than I am in biology and this kind of stuff, you'll know better what I'm talking about. But dopamine is a chemical substance within you that is activated in the pleasure sensors of your brain, right? So it's like Pavlov's dog. You ring the bell and it starts salivating because it knows it's about to experience something joyful. And it becomes, you know, there's a certain level you can get to where you're addicted to that, right? So in terms of like pornography, you probably have heard this a lot, where most people start small and they need more and more experience and more interaction, and they need to push the boundaries further and further and further to continue feeling joy. That's the dopamine response. Until you get to where you're, you know, like psychopaths who are just, you know, doing horrible things, right? Because your body is becoming more and more used to this chemical response, and it's needing more and more to activate that in your body. That's an addictive feature. You're addicted to that feeling that you get when you engage in this thing. Prevalence. Do you find yourself doing it more than you originally planned? Do you find yourself saying, I'm done. Well, just 5 more minutes. One more time. I'll do this one last thing before I stop. Just a little bit more and then I'm finished. So is there that prevalence where you just find yourself engaging in it more than you had planned? Cessation. Are you anxious or uncomfortable or panicky of the thought with going without it, right? So if you think about, like, there's something, you're going to be in a situation where you know you're not going to be engaging in this and in a good period of time, does it just kind of make you, it just makes you a little jittery, or like, you're like, ooh, that's, you know, that in a chemical thing is, it's like that's a physical reaction. Well, you're starting to see, psychologists are starting to see that non-chemical substances are just as addictive because they have the same kinds of response. Disruption. Has it disrupted your relationships? Is it causing interpersonal or personal conflicts? Who or what are you pushing aside to do this thing or engage in it more and more and more? And the last is reverting. Do you make plans to change behavior but find yourself doing the same thing? For instance, how many of you, after January 1, say, I'm going to eat better? Well, after I visit that bakery one last time, right? Or after I get this one more meal in, then I'll do it. And you constantly are putting off changing the behavior, doing something better. Okay, here's the point at which I'm afraid I may lose you. I'm going to tell you specifically what I think and have been building a case towards that I really want you to consider whether or not you might fit within the parameters of having a compulsion. Towards. Okay. Your cell phone. Whew. Your cell phone. So here's a couple funny things, right? When you hope you hit a red light so you can comment on a like or a Facebook post. How many of you have been there? Anybody? Come on, raise your hand. Yep. When you drop on your phone on your face because you're dozing off. Some of you are like, oh, I can't believe you said that. When you're staring at photos you took on your phone while the actual moment is still taking place. Anybody? This is one of my favorite memes. Is anybody going to go stare at their phone somewhere cool this weekend? Because you know that Chip and I were talking about, we're at a football game and you look around the stands and like 65% are just looking at their phones, right? When you choose clothing based on the best pockets in which to hold your phones. Anybody been there or done that? All right. So, I want you to hang with me here, because I really believe, and it's not just me, but a lot of the research that I'm doing that I will not represent well, shows that there is a major health crisis facing this generation, not just your generation, but across the board, all the adults in here too, because of the severe spike in use of our cell phones, to the point where several institutions have kind of cropped up to study this, and one of them that I was looking at put together a smartphone compulsion test. This is the Center for Internet and Technology Addiction. They put together this test, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but I do want you to honestly evaluate the answers to these questions, because this isn't just kind of a silly thing. Now, here's the thing. I'm not a Luddite, right? Like, I like my phone, and I like using it, and it's a great tool, but I've seriously considered and had to consider, has my use of it switched from just activity and usefulness to something more without me even really knowing it happened? And I've concluded, guys, the answer is yes. The answer is yes. And I have made a concerted effort since I've been looking into this to not engage in it as much. And it's hard. It's hard. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how to do that in a minute. But I want you to seriously consider this. And this is where I don't want to lose you. Because I'm not saying like you should just throw them away and burn them up or whatever. Although some of you may be to the point where you need to do that. But I seriously want you to consider this. So, think about these questions. Do you find yourself spending more time on your cell phone or smartphone than you realize you are? That moment, it's kind of like when you're driving and suddenly you're home and you don't remember how you got there. It's like, do you do that where you're like on your phone and the next thing you know, it's like, 3:30 in the morning? No. Do you find yourself mindlessly passing time on a regular basis by staring at your cell phone or smartphone? Do you seem to lose track of time when you're on your cell phone or smartphone? Do you find yourself spending more time texting, tweeting, or emailing as opposed to talking to people in person? Has the amount of time you spent on your cell phone been increasing? Do you wish you could be a little less involved with your cell phone or smartphone? Do you sleep with your phone turned on under your pillow or next to your bed on a regular basis?
Well, it's my alarm, so yeah.
Okay, but I'm just saying. But the question is like some people put it across the room. Because the real thing here behind this is, okay, so I'll get back to this. All right. Do you find yourself viewing and answering texts, tweets, and emails at all hours of the day and night, even when it means interrupting other things you are doing? So that's the case where it's like if it's your by your bed and it's your alarm clock, that's one thing. But if you're getting messages and you're waking yourself up, that's something different. Or this is my least favorite thing ever. This is the disruption of personal interpersonal relationships. When I'm talking to someone at a meal and they get a message, and as I'm like telling them something really important, you're doing this, right? And I'm going to talk about why. And I want to talk about why that you. I want to talk about why we think it's possible to do that, but it's not. I want to talk about in a second why we think it's possible for that to be okay and for us to attend to both at the same time, but it's not. All right, I'm not done with these questions. Do you text, email, tweet, or surf while driving or doing other similar activities that require your focused attention and concentration? I'm going to say the answer is yes, because I've seen everyone doing it. Do you feel your use of your cell phone decreases your productivity at times? Do you feel reluctant to be without your cell phone or smartphone even for a short time? Sometimes even walking maybe 30 minutes out of your way to go back to your dorm because you forgot it. Do you feel ill at ease or uncomfortable when you accidentally leave it at home or in a car or have no service or it breaks? When you eat meals, is your phone always a part of the table place setting? When your cell phone or smartphone rings, beeps, or buzzes, do you feel an intense urge to check it for tweets, texts, emails, or updates? Do you find yourself mindlessly checking your phone many times a day, even when you know there is nothing important new to see? Now, they call this the compulsion test that gives a high indication of whether or not someone might be addicted if you answer yes to 5 or more of those questions. People a whole lot smarter than me who have devoted their life to neuropsychology are saying if you answer 5 of these as yes or more, there is a likelihood that you have developed a physiological response to your phone. In fact, I was talking to a doctor friend of mine this week, and he put me in touch with Dr. Vaughn, who is a neurologist here in town. He was at a conference recently, and he said the studies that they were presenting were shocking. That the frontal cortex of our brain, the part that deals with like pleasure and stimulation, is literally thinning as a result of our constant use of our phones, because it's like we just need something new. We need something to see something all the time, constantly be checking. And it's not even the content of what we're looking at, just the fact that it is something new. And that we feel as though we are being connected and we're being heard and we're being seen. But we're literally losing the ability to truly experience joy because of it. In a control test that they did. I asked them to forward me all of that stuff and I haven't had a chance to really look at it. Okay, so I want to talk for a minute about where that conversation is about the physical but also the spiritual ramifications of this conversation. It seems like such a silly thing, right? But I don't think it is. I don't think it is. As we've defined idolatry, as we've defined addiction, I think there is really something to whether or not things have become idols or gods in our lives. We think that we are able to do two things at once, right? We think that it is okay for us to pull out our phones in the middle of a conversation because I can attend to both of those, and it's not disrupting. Or we think we're the exception to the rule that says you can't get on your phone while you're in your car because you're able to handle it, right? We think we're the exception to I can walk along the sidewalk and I can check my stuff and my business and it's not going to be an issue. Well, here's the thing. They came out with this thing called the Functional Magnetic Resonance Image Machine that allows you to literally look inside the brain in real time to see how your brain is responding. And what they found was that the brain can do and attend to two things at once, as long as they are not connecting to the same parts of the brain that deal with the same stuff, right? So, for instance, only if the functions are required in separate parts of your brain. So reading and listening to instrumental music, you can do that because one is a visual input and one is auditory. But if you add music with lyrics, suddenly your productivity, your ability to retain information goes way down because your brain cannot attend to both. You cannot read and take in information while listening to lyrics. You think you are because your brain is constantly switching back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And so you're missing stuff, right? You're missing things. You're not actually able to do it. We think that we can read and listen to, or that we can walk and be on our phones at the same time, but they're both dealing with visual stimuli. One of the first like big viral videos was this lady who was on her phone and walked directly into a fountain because she could not attend spatially to the world around her while she's attending visually to what is on her phone. You can't do it. Carr and Driver did a test. There's a reason why we passed these laws. They did a study to find out reaction times and distance traveled in a car under various circumstances, right? So a normal, undistracted driver who was focused would be driving around and a little light would appear in their car signaling them to stop. So the distance traveled is how they would measure that, right? So it took them less than half a second to recognize that the light came on and they need to stop their car. They tested drunk drivers. A drunk driver, it took them 4 more feet to stop their car than it took the uninhibited driver. A person who was reading an email added 36 feet to the stopping time. Someone who was texting added 70 feet. 70 feet to the stopping time because they were texting over a drunk driver. That is insane. We cannot do it. We think we can multitask, but we can't. Our brains are not wired for it. You cannot be visually and mentally engaged and pay attention around you. So that's some of the physical stuff, and I could read you tons and tons of more statistics and things, right, about everything and how it all works and blah, 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 but you probably heard lots of those. So let me talk for a minute about the other aspect, the spiritual, the emotional, the mental side of things. As we said, we are shaped by what we worship. Worship, liturgical practice, is defined by activities that you do over and over and over again that are doing something to you. They are love-shaping, heart-shaping practices, things that form us and shape us in how we think and how we interact with the world, right? So I want to give you an example of something here. Now, I am in no way giving my support to what's being advertised here, but this is a great example.
Welcome to the afterlife, where you never have to settle for less. With 95 calories, 2.6 carbs.
All right, I have a real problem with this commercial, other than the fact of what is advertising, right? But what is the problem with this commercial? What does that what did that last line say? Yeah, you never have to settle. But did you notice what was happening in it? What were all the motions that they were doing? It's all stuff that we are ritually doing over and over, thousands of times a day. Steve Jobs was the master of desire and intimacy. His partner even said that. And he wanted to create an experience in which you are literally caressing and interacting with your phone. It will always show up for you in the exact way that you mean it, that you need it to. It will never let you down. It will always be there. And he literally said, I want to, like, there's something about fondling it and caressing it. It creates an emotional connection to a device. And the thing about this commercial is it represents this idea that now I take what I'm doing here and getting this thing to show up for me and do exactly what I want it to do, and now I can do that to the world. And I should never be satisfied with anything less than controlling the world and having it be exactly what I want it to be. Well, the problem is that doesn't happen. So what happens when the world doesn't respond and show up for you the way you have been ritually trained to expect? How do you deal with that emotionally, spiritually? How do you deal with it? And it becomes like a conversation's boring. We'll just swipe right, or left, or whatever it is. I don't even know. And I can just pick up my phone. If I'm not interested in you or your conversation, I'll just pick up this. And what does that do to my relationship? What does that do to you? We are being trained to interact with the world completely differently. There is really something to what's going on. And I wish I had more brains and more time to sell this case to you even more. But all I can do at this point is leave it to you to think, is there a problem? Do you have an issue with this? Now, if you do, there's a way you can get out of this. Aziz Ansari is an actor, and he's deleted everything off his phone and gotten rid of everything. And he was like, you know what? I'm finding that I'm putting stuff into my brain now. I can, like, just be in my own space easier, and it's just life has gotten better. Well, we don't have a lot of time left, but Ellie, I want you to come up here. Ellie, would you pull out your phone and show everybody real quick? No, please. Come on. Come up here, please.
You want me to get up?
I do. I told you I was going to have you do this. Show everybody your phone. She has a flip phone. Now, when I first had breakfast with her once and I saw this, I was like, what happened to your phone? She was, and what'd you tell me? I chose to give it up and replace it with this. Will you tell everybody, like, your thought process and what it's been like since?
I think that I just was, like, noticing that I was having, like, I think pain manifests itself in that through, like, anxiety and social anxiety. And so I wanted to, like, be more aware of what's going on around me. And so I got a flip phone. And so it's been really cool because I feel like I've had less anxiety that way. And, like, I really think that we're just, like, kind of out of practice as, like, human beings. And, like, we don't know how to, like, engage properly. And, like, I'll be, like, standing in line now. And, like, I can't, like, play on my phone, really. And so I just stand there. And then people, like, don't talk because there's no one else just standing around. But sometimes there is, and they talk to me, but...
Has life gotten better or worse since you've gotten rid of your smartphone?
It's gotten better. Yesterday, I got really lost, replaced, and it was really frustrating, but other than that, it's been good.
But you got to experience a new place, right, and figure out how to make your way back. All right, sorry to do that. But I just wanted you to see, like, there's somebody doing this. It's not just this dude who's got lots of money and he can travel and do all kinds of crazy cool stuff. But there's someone among you who's said, like, you know what? This is actually a problem and I don't need it. I don't need to be connected. I don't need. And one of the things that he says in this article is like, when he first got rid of it, he was like, he said, how am I going to look stuff up? But he says, most of that stuff you don't really even need to know. Everything that you read, everything you look at in line, it's not about the content. It's just about seeing something new. All right, so we're out of time. I hope I didn't lose you. I hope you will really consider whether or not this is something that you need to think about in your own life. Okay, we'll see you next week. Hopefully we'll see you Wednesday. I know that there's a lot of club things happening, which I would also suggest you should think about. No, just kidding. No. All right, y'all have a great... Oh, tonight at 6:30. Come join us. Sir.